Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 54. We're covering the 2019 Sony Open on the PGA Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour preview at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Evening, Paul.
Evening, Steve. How are you doing?
Yeah, we're good. We also have the 2019 debut of podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Nice to have you on board this evening, Barry. How are you?
Happy New Year, everyone. I'm good. Excited. It's nice to have had that break. I think everybody kind of gets a little worn thin towards the end of the year. And it's actually easing back in with the Tournament of Champions. It's a good kind of soft entry to the year. So, yeah, looking forward to a full field event this week.
Yeah, definitely. And Happy New Year to you as well, Barry.
Happy New Year, Barry. Yep.
Thank you, guys.
GolfBettingSystem.co.uk, that's our website. We are available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the podcast description box. Our Twitter handles, I'm at Bamford Golf, Paul is at Golf Betting, Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, and a myriad of different pod channels. You can also listen via the Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. We would love a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts to help spread the word about the show, and it helps to keep all of our weekly content free across the website. Like I did last year, I'll also read out my reviews, or any reviews, rather, on next week's show. Okay. Yeah, Tournament of Champions. I had 3 in the top 8, made a loss on the week, and in DeChambeau and Leishman, I thought I had a pretty good chance of actually scoring the win at various points through the tournament.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen.
Leishman was closest, wasn't he? I know all 3 of us were on Leishman, weren't we? So a bit disappointing to just get a share of the each way money in the end.
Yeah, not good.
Given that he'd played pretty well. I mean, there were too many big mistakes in there, weren't there, over the course of the week. But you know, he's still clearly playing some decent enough stuff in general.
Couldn't get any momentum yesterday at all. I watched as much of the final round as my eyes would allow me to. I fell asleep at about 3 holes to go, but he just never got the putter going in the final round. So, and you just need momentum there on a Sunday.
Do you think the fact that Xander was playing one of the rounds of like the millennium kind of put him off? Yeah, it must be mad when you're playing with someone that's playing that well.
It's so frustrating because like you see everything he hits goes in, including shots from off the green, and everything you hit just rolls over the edge or just misses, and it's kind of a circle of frustration, I guess. So, but he's such a good guy. Leishman is. He was giving Xander fist bumps and stuff like so. You know, his time will come. I'm not saying it's a karma thing, but he's just a super talented golfer, and he could. He could easily just go and grab the win this week, but sure, we'll get to that when we get to the tournament preview.
If you look at the black and white facts, we've still got a scenario where Gary Woodland is a three-time PGA Tour winner. How he actually lost that, I'll never know. Although you can't really say he lost it. I don't think he did. You know, he shot 5-under in the final round, and he was responding on the back 9, made that big putt on 17. Just didn't, under the most severe pressure. He said he was in between clubs with his second, his approach into 18, and he tried to hook it in, just didn't hook. And he lost by a shot. I mean, that round by Xander, that must go down as one of the craziest closing rounds that we've seen for a long, long time.
With the bogey to start as well.
Insane. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Insane.
No, look, Gary Woodland cannot be anything other than feeling heartbroken, ripped and you know, ripped off after yesterday. He made a couple of really clutch par putts, kind of around the middle of the round. You know, those 8 to 10 footers that kept it going. So I thought he played brilliantly up until
he played well all week,
15th.
Didn't he?
What can you do?
You just got one of those days where someone just comes through with something incredible, and how can you compete with it? You know, he did as much as he reasonably could. As you say, he didn't birdie the last, and perhaps you would have expected him to do that. But other than that, yeah, hats off to him.
That's a great week. And if all you can do is take confidence out of that and say, do you know what? Somebody had to put in a worldy performance, like a performance, a round of the year, or, you know, a contender for round of the year to beat me today. So just take it forward and go, hey, if I keep playing like that, the win will fall sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and he's been playing well for a while now, hasn't he?
We have seen people in the past, Jimmy Walker being the one that I remember back in 15, who lost in a playoff at Kapalua and then came here and won. So it does happen. It has happened.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Gary. He's always been the same, isn't he? He needs to knock at the door 5, 6, 7 times and eventually the door opens and he wins one.
Yeah, his price is prohibitively short by that point. So,
well, of course,
from a betting perspective, it starts to look a bit unrealistic, doesn't it? We're getting 14s today. Some of the bookies are short as 9-1 in this week, which it's getting a bit on the short side for me.
Yeah, Unibet at 9-1. That's outrageous. That's an outrageous price. But yes, I mean, you can't knock his credentials. I would not be surprised, especially with his record around here, to see him being a factor this week. But yeah. Now, let's talk Sony Open. It's always the first full field event of the calendar year. Clearly, it used to be the full field event of the season, but those days have long gone. Played at Wyalight Country Club, which is a par 70. It's an old-style kind of golf course. It's a Seth Rayner original design. We're looking at 7,444 yards. Two par 5, so the traditional par 70 layout. And what we've seen here recently is it's really become quite an easy test. 2016, it ranked 45 of 50 courses on the PGA Tour. 2017 was the year that Thomas won at 22 under or something ridiculous. 27 under. Yeah.
That was the year he got his 59, wasn't it, when he opened with 59 that day, or that week.
Yeah. Difficulty ranked that year 43 of 50, and last year it was 39 of 51 courses. There's no real difficulty to it. It's all pretty much straight in front of you. The 18th's always a memorable hole. It's one of those dog leg lefts, isn't it? And they try and cut it over the corner or hook it round or draw it round if you've got the draw kind of shot in the locker. And it's just one of those tests, really, where conditions again have a major effect on it. I was surprised slightly last year actually, because Keziah won at 17 under, which I classify as kind of mid-teen score. It wasn't a genuine resort score that won it, as we said before, with Thomas shooting 27 under the year before. He won by 7 shots, by the way, from Justin Rose, who shot 20 under. But reading back, a lot of that was because the last couple of years they've been kind of filtering in new green surfaces across a number of holes. And a lot of the players were commenting about the fact that, yes, the greens were very non-receptive and, you know, ball approach shots weren't being accepted. And that did have an effect on scores. We're a year down the line. Whether they put any more new greens in play, we don't know. We'll find out over the course of the next few days. But just looking at the weather forecast, it looks like there's going to be pretty much no wind to speak of, nothing over 10 miles an hour. And if it gets to that, it looks like it might not even get there on a couple of days. There hasn't been a lot of rain in the area, so Kapalua looked quite soft, especially at the start of the tournament, first two rounds. There was plenty of cut in the fairways. I don't think we'll see that this week at Wyalight Country Club. And what you tend to get here is a lot of run on the fairways anyway.
Yeah, it's not a long course, is it? So no, it's not going to play particularly long at all, is it, really?
I don't think you're going to get a lot of cut in the fairways, but it's still going to be scorable. So I think we're going to see some really long driving distance numbers. I think everyone's going to be getting it out there. Statistically, what you need around here, as we know now, I've added these strokes gain tournament trends on the preview. I've put a link through to the preview in the podcast description for listeners, as I always do. Take the last 3 years, so Keziah, Thomas and Gomez won in 2016. Good old Fabian Gomez. 20 under he won at. Thomas was 27 under. Keziah was 17 under. If you look at the stroke gain numbers and average them out across the field, the numbers, the two numbers that absolutely jump off the page. Strokes gained approach, they across those three winners, they were in position three. And strokes gained putting, again, position three. So effectively, it turns into a who can get the ball consistently in range to make birdie putts and then who's got the hot putter. It's as simple as that, really. Strokes gained off the tee number and driving accuracy numbers, they're way out there. I mean, the average here for driving accuracy of the winners since 2010 is 38th in the field. So accuracy, I always used to think of this place as a kind of Tim Clark, Zach Johnson kind of fair, a Johnson Wagner who won here.
That was the test, wasn't it? You know, Jerry Kelly's won here, isn't he? Mark Wilson, that kind of players.
Plotters.
Short, accurate, decent putters.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of test, but as you say, it's kind of mutated.
It's gone, mate,
hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, last year, Keziah, 51.8% of fairways, was 56th in the field in terms of his fairway accuracy, and that was the same with Thomas Gomez. No one's hitting fairways. They're basically saying that they cut the rough back right back. There's plenty of run on the fairways. If you miss on the right side of the fairway, you've got no issues with your approach shots, and you can kind of see that with the way the course plays. There's loads of information, as per usual, on my preview. We've had winners here from off the pace, just to throw that in there. Keziah was 20th after round one last year. Fabian Gomez in 2016 was 68th. So, as per usual, if you open up on a Friday morning and you look at the leaderboard and your players aren't at the top, don't necessarily throw your phone out the window on Friday. They need to start getting into contention, though, end of play Friday. They need to really be in situ for round three. Keziah was second. Justin Thomas was leading. Fabian Gomez was fifth. Jimmy Walker was first. Jimmy Walker, when he won the first time, was fourth. So you've got to be in those last couple of groups come Sunday. What do you guys make of the Sony Open? Is it a tournament you enjoy? What do you think of the golf course? How does it flow with you two?
For us, it's kind of almost too many hours behind. You need to make a pretty concerted effort to fire the TV up at around 10:30, 11 at night. So it's always been one that I've caught bits and pieces of and not watched, you know, the full amount. Although now I've kind of switched my body clock to late night viewing, having watched the final round last night, I could end up watching the whole load of the coverage. Yeah, it feels weird knowing that there's not going to be much wind there this week. Usually just expect, no. You know, Hawaii, you're going to have wind to deal with. And without that, I expect the scoring to be very low. I mean,
if you give these guys a chance, someone's going to rip it to shreds.
They'll tear it. Somebody's going to get into the low mid-20s, won't they?
You got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So, who's got the putter in the fire at the moment, you know, ready to roll in a whole lot of birdies?
Here's a couple of stats for you. We've been in this situation where they play Kapalua, then Wailea, haven't they? Past 20 champions, 14 had played on Maui the week before. So 70%. If you look at that as well, since they went to this new scenario whereby the actual year starts here rather than the season, since 2014, Walker times two, Gomez, Thomas and Keziah had all played the Tournament of Champions the week before. Course experience also seems to pay dividends here. 12 of the past 13 champions had played the Sony Open prior to lifting the trophy. The exception there was Russell Henley back in 2013 when he'd won a couple of late season Web.com Tour events and then on his PGA Tour debut, get that, he won this at something crazy like 23, 24 under, because that was the year I was on Tim Clark and he finished second.
Yeah, he opened with like three rounds, 63 or something ridiculous, didn't he? It was just a procession for a player who was so raw,
but
in terms of experience.
Now we know Russell Henley, he fits the bill really, doesn't he? He's kind of guy that hits high GIR. When he gets his putter going, he can absolutely rip any golf course apart, especially a Bermuda grass green golf course. With that in mind, we're not looking at Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass this week, as we saw last week at Kapalua. We've got to a rarer strain this week. It's Tiff Dwarf Bermuda grass. And that is shared with golf courses like Sea Island, where they play the RSM Classic at the end of the year. It's also shared with the Sanderson Farms Championship that they used to play at Annandale, but they now play that at the Country Club of Jackson. And you do see strains of form around those three courses that kind of intermingle together. So if there's a player you fancy and they've got some form at the Country Club of Jackson, I mean, Justin Thomas has got top five there, for example. And Patton Kizzire has finished in the top three there at the Country Club of Jackson. So that kind of form is not a bad thing to see if you can see that in a player you're interested in. And the same, of course, goes for the RSM Classic. You know, you've got the obvious players like Kevin Kisner, who's played well at both golf courses. And the list goes on, really.
Tends to be a bit grainier, doesn't it, Tiff Dwarf? So it kind of makes sense why you've got some players who, or you look at the event history and players who have played the event before seem to be at an advantage, and Henley aside, as you just said. And some of that will be down to the fact that you need to be able to read the greens to be able to compile a score that's in the, you know, a competitive 20 under, 20, 22, 27, as you said with JT. So, having some experience with players who do get on with different strains and grainier Bermuda can't be a bad thing, I don't think.
In my mind, it's the kind of test... Although I'll be honest, I've never actually managed to snag the winner here. I've had a couple of runners up. But it's the kind of test where you need... I don't think it's a pure ball strikers test, if you see what I mean. I don't think it's a ball strikers test where, you know, you've just got to constantly plough greens. If the putter isn't working at all, you're not going to win. You can get a good place or whatever. But actually, when you see that number that says the winner here the last 3 years has averaged third in strokes gained putting, that doesn't feel like... who doesn't it feel like? It doesn't feel like a pure ball striker like a Gary Woodland or potentially someone of that ilk. Scott Piercy. I had a good look at Piercy this week. I think Piercy can place, but whether he can win... You know, he's got a putt out of his skin to win around here, and that potentially isn't a Scott Piercy. So if you can find more of a short game putter that's actually hitting tons of greens at the moment, that is a really good look. Are you still there?
Oh, I think we're all sitting there waiting on which one of us will go first with our first pick.
you go first. I mean, my preview's gone out. I'm going to work in reverse order as well. I'm going to go biggest price first, and then we'll go down to the short price. But
right, well,
you
I'm going to go
first.
The complete opposite way. I'm going to go my shortest price first.
Go on.
And you mentioned his name there. He won in Sea Island in 15, and the first kind of thought I had in my head this week was Hawaii link to Carolina, just the Carolinas, you know, that kind of, you get those windy kind of seaside courses. I know it's not going to be windy this week. You have the Bermuda grass. So Kevin Kisner jumped into my head and has a decent record here. If I just pull up he's a fourth and a fifth. He was 25th last year, but fourth and fifth the 2 years before, and has actually played just a couple of times in the last 6 weeks, which is kind of what I want to see as well. I don't like to see somebody having like 6-8 weeks off. You just want to, you know, just keep the hand in. So
he played the QBE, didn't he? The team event in Florida after he finished seventh at the RSM Classic. So he's played some winter golf, hasn't he?
came, what was it, 12th out of 12 or something like that. But, you know, that's no big deal. So you're out, you're playing. So, and clearly likes this course, with course experience being kind of a bit help here. I was very happy to take him on. And who was next? I'll just rip my whole three. I'll go through my whole three. So my next one was Kyle Stanley.
Oh, my. I thought we were talking about people that could putt.
I know, but, you know, these guys can all putt. He just needs to be able to find it this week. I'm going on the fact that he is lethal off the tee, extremely accurate. So he's going to give himself lots of approach shots from the fairway, to which will help him get the ball, hopefully good proximity for the week, and then that'll negate the need to be an unbelievable putter. He'll just need to be above average for the week. So... yeah, I know.
13th in his last three tries here, so he's clearly getting to like the course.
It's a little bit of a stretch, but the name popped in my head. I'm trying not to get too technical at the start of the year with my getting, you know, but by kind of the time we get to the Masters, I'll be leveling myself out of picks and into picks with like all sorts of factors. Right now, I'm just kind of going the spider senses, and his name shot off the page, so I said, that's good enough for me. And then I went and found some facts to back up why I'm backing him.
Don't we all, mate? Don't we
all? In his defence, this is Carl Stanley's defence as opposed to Barry's, 10th last year, he was top 15 for putting. So, you know, you could argue with that, given that he's played the track six times, that he gets on, you know, disproportionately well with this particular track. You know, 10th, an improvement on 10th, it's a place from for this week, doesn't feel too much of a stretch.
He fits the bill in terms of the fact that he can hit tons and tons of fairways and greens. He's an absolute machine. And like you say, those kind of players can certainly get into the mix, there's no doubt about that. I mean, last year we had Tom Hoagie and James Harn right up there. So yeah. Oh yeah, it's more than possible.
And kind of a bonus was he's market best price, 8 places with Paddy Power. So, you know.
Yeah.
I've got my maximum places and the best price, so I was dead happy with that. And I have one moonshot is who we're all waiting for him to win. Who knows if this is the week or not, but Sam Burns, available at 100-1 plus, depending on what bookies and price combination you want to take.
Yeah, we all like Sam Burns on Bermuda, don't we?
Yeah, and he's a bit of a putting machine, so if he can just keep the long game tidy enough to give himself enough looks, that could be a good combination for the week. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he's certainly talented. Sam Burns, Sam Ryder, both of those guys, you wouldn't, you know, be surprised to see him pop up with some really good finishes, potentially a win during the course of 2019 at some point.
Yeah, so hopefully he's smart enough to pick the brains of somebody who's played this course a few times, because this is his tournament debut. So just give himself a little leg up on the course. So, yeah. Those are my three for the week. I really do fancy Kisner very strongly. I've gone like 754 points each way on him.
To be precise.
Yeah, exactly.
That must have registered with the European Central Bank, that kind of bet, I thought. That's moving currency.
Yeah. No, I moved the entire odds checker myself.
No, I like that. I mean, from my perspective, I think I put a little bit more credence in accuracy for this. I hear what you're saying, Steve, about the way that it's shifted over the years, but my perception of the track, my perception of the event, is that I think to compile the kind of score that you're going to need, particularly with it being pretty calm, pretty placid, I think if you can hit a little bit more than the kind of average we're talking about here, you know, low 50s fairways. If you can hit slightly more than that, give yourself more of a chance of avoiding those flyers out of the rough, more of a chance of getting your proximity closer to the pin, more of a look at some short putts, I think you're going to be in a position to make more of those putts and to compile a lower score. So I do put a little bit more credence personally on accuracy for this particular event. And I can see where you're coming from with Carl Stanley, Barry. I looked at Zach Johnson, and Zach, he finished, what was it, seventh at the RSM at the back end of last year. And that was a bit of a step forward. Obviously, he's won here. Actually, he's won at Papalura as well, hasn't he, over the years, Zach?
Yeah.
40-1, I haven't pulled the trigger on that. I've gone to ponder it a little bit more, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Zach go quite well this week. And the putter seems to be working a bit stronger. I think he putted something like 1.65, that kind of bracket on his last start, which he hadn't been putting particularly well for a while, and that was a stat I liked. Siwoo Kim's another one that I looked at, 50-1. I couldn't quite pull the trigger on that, but again, if you're looking for someone who's good from tee to green, but he has been improving in his putting. I'm sure he appeared on some of your rolling stats recently as well, Steve.
He's number one on the PGA Tour for strokes gained putting at the moment.
Guys, hang on. You do remember 2018 and Siwoo? Yeah? Like, we didn't just get, like, amnesia as the gong, like, clicked 12 on the 31st of December. Come on.
The slate's cleaned with the new year.
I was all over Siwoo Kim last year at far too many events.
Yeah.
Down all the time.
And did you see what happened? The guy who put the dagger through our hearts last year when we were on him at 200-1, Kadira decided to prop up the field last week at the Plantation course. That was just the insult to the injury, I thought, you know, to go there and just win a tournament and then go to the Tournament of Champions and play absolute. Yeah, we're not there.
I loaded up on him last year. He finished 58th. He'll probably go well this year, actually.
Yeah, he's got some. Didn't he finish second or third on debut here? From memory, I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did reasonably well before last year. But I, having said all of that, I've still not backed him because, you know, as Barry said, you know, some things linger for longer in your memory than perhaps they should. And if it had been twice the price, I think I'd have been. I wouldn't even be thinking about it. But 50-1. Doesn't feel quite long enough for me to take a chance on Siwoo. The reason there was a big silence earlier, Steve, is because I was trying to word how I was going to bring my Scott Piercy bet into the conversation, seeing as you'd just basically said that I was a non-starter. But I think
Piercy can place if you're happy with each way money.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Whether he can, statistically, you look at it, Scott Piercy finishes second, yeah, potentially, yeah. But he doesn't win.
Yeah.
And he's finished second here in the past.
Yeah, it's done, yeah. I thought 60-1 was worth taking to ask the question as to whether he can continue some good form that he has shown.
Yeah.
And if you look at, going back to his last five events, 27th at the CIMB, he was fifth going into the weekend.
I think we've all had chunks of him over the last few outings, haven't we?
Yeah, we have, yeah. So he did all right at the CIMB. Fifth at the CJ Cup, second going into the final round. So again, he had a chance there. Tenth at the Shriners, sixth at Mayakoba. He finished with 62 there. So if you want someone who's scoring well, clearly, to finish with the 62, you're doing pretty well. 19th last week, so he ticks that box from having played Kapalua. He opened with something horrific, didn't he? 76.
Yeah, he did, but then he picked his way through it, didn't he? Mm.
Yeah,
I noticed that. You know, he was eking his way up the leaderboard through it, and in the end, he threw in a 269s on the weekend, round three and round four.
Yeah.
So yeah, his game's good, Piercy.
Yeah, he's improving.
I can see him being a serious factor.
Yeah, and in terms of from off the tee, he's finding lots of fairways, as you'd expect. Third fairways found last week, which suggests that he's long game, and there's no problem with it. If you look at his putting, going back to some of those results, CJ Cup, he was fourth for putting average. The Mayakoba, he was seventh, and he putted at sub 1.6. And for Scott Piercy to produce a sub 1.6 putting average, that's, for me, that's a big eye-opener. As you said, second here in 2015. The Open was 64-64 in 2013. Second at the halfway point. So I think he likes the track. He's been in the mix a number of years here without, you know, say for that second place. He's found himself in a position where he could have pushed on a number of times. A couple of Bermuda wins. But just before we came on, I saw a tweet from Ben Coley where he was talking about, he showed some tweets from Piercy, who was talking about his favourite track, his favourite event on the PGA Tour. And every time he's been asked the question, he's responded with the Sony Open. He's responded with this event and this track being his favourite event and favourite course on the PGA Tour, which kind of backed up where I was thinking in terms of, you know, him standing a chance at 60-1. So hopefully I've defended that admirably, given that the kind of emphasis was against ball strikers. But I think he's got a chance. I think he's worth taking on at that price. So that's my shorter of the two bets that I've had so far. And the second one, I was placing it just literally as we were coming on air, is Brian Gay. And again, he kind of falls back into this pattern of the players that we talked about at the start, the Jerry Kellys, the KJ Choys, the Mark Wilsons, you know, these shorter, tidier players. The thing with Brian is actually he's been putting quite well. He's got 3 Bermuda wins over the course of his career. Very consistent recently, 11 cuts made on the trot. And again, you know, similar to Piercy, he's been in the mix a number of times over the recent past without really threatening. So 7th going into Sunday at the RSM, 3rd at halfway at the Mycoba. He shot a 63 in the second round there, so his shooting boots are on that particular week. He shot 65 at the Shriners the week before that. A couple of top 6 finishes here over the years. And again, quite recently, 13th in 2017, he's shot 64 in the second round. So I think if you can find a putter and with Brian Gay, that's not a big ask because he is a fantastic putter. Accurate. I think there's a lot to like about him. I thought 125-1 was a price that was worth taking on. There's a bit of disparity between the bookies with Brian Gay as well. Some were as short as 66s earlier. So 125 was, again, a chance worth taking. But they're just the two that I've backed so far today. And if I had a third, it would likely be Zach Johnson. But I've not actually convinced myself that that's the bet to take yet.
Zach.
Did he sort himself out with a new caddy yet? Could get the new caddy bounce.
Yeah.
Worth having a look at, actually. I can't answer yes or no. But these are the kind of things I think to pull the trigger at 40-1. Yep. Need to be a little bit more convinced about the overall package with Zach, but I think there's something there. I think there's some improvement, and I think you know, clearly he likes the track and he likes the part of the world as well. So potentially. So where are you going then, Steve?
Well, if we look at the last few winners here, Keziah, 15th at Kapalua, 45th at RSM, and he won the Mayakoba. You then look at Justin Thomas. He won at Kapalua, came here, won again at 14-1. You look then at someone like Fabian Gomez. He finished 6th at Kapalua, and then a couple of outings before that, he won a domestic tournament in Argentina. And then you can even go back to Jimmy Walker in 2015. He'd finished runner-up in he'd lost a playoff at Kapalua. And the year before that, when he won here, the first time, he was only 21st at Kapalua, but he'd won on a full series event at Courdival, and he'd finished 6th at the CIMB Classic. So if you look at that, 4 of the last 5 winners have all won a tournament this side of the Tour Championship, and the other one had finished 2nd at Kapalua. So I think that's not a bad steer as it goes, some kind of immediate form. I'll tell you where my short...
Back end of the previous year, yeah.
Yeah, you got it. I'll tell you where my short list came to. It came to 6 players in the end, and I've chosen 4. I had the 2 that I looked at and was were very tempted with but didn't go for them was Brian Harman, who won the QBE Classic a few weeks ago with Pat and Keziah. and who was 66-1, and I think that's a good price in this event with a player that's got a decent record around here. And again, Carman's the sort, isn't he? Relatively sure, accurate. It's lots of greens when he's in good nick, and he can be an absolute lights out putter.
Yeah.
So he follows that kind of route of someone that's a little bit more accurate but quite aggressive with it as well. So Harman, yeah. I know he's been backed in quite heavily this afternoon. We're recording this Monday tea time in the UK as ever.
It's good in the wind, Harman, isn't he? So with a little bit more wind in the forecast, you could have seen
maybe.
It.
I was on him last year and he was actually the 36-hole leader and he was 20-1 last year because he was in such good nick. The other one that I really did have a very close look at, and this guy I'm warming to him, I was a bit... It's difficult to know with a lot of these young players just how good they are, but the more I see him, the more I'm starting to get my head round that this guy I think is going to be a very, very elite player. It's not just the fact that he won since he got promoted to the PGA Tour, it's the fact that from that point onwards he's gone to various different tracks... And he's always been competitive. He's always been in the mix. And just from a statistical perspective and just the way he plays the game, I could see Cameron Champ going well this week. There was a smidgen of 30-1 about him, which was the price that I put down on my shortlist.
Can I just say, that's going to be the most overused phrase on this podcast this year.
What's that?
I could see Cameron Champ going well this week. The guy's lethal. It's going to be hard to pick and choose your weeks when you actually back him.
At the end of the day, you know, this kind of banging it as far as you can off the tee and gouging it out the rough, that's just as effective around Wailea, how it can be. You know, Jimmy Walker's no driving accuracy animal, is he? And Justin Thomas, as we said, was less than 50% of driving in terms of hitting fairways. The other thing I've noticed with Champ, I've watched quite a lot of content of him playing over the end of last year. And actually, you go and watch him on courses like Sea Island, he was using a lot of irons off the tee.
Mm-hmm.
So he's clearly not one of these guys that literally pulls drive. You know, he's not a Johnny Vegas, or he's not the kind of guy that just will pull driver on every hole.
No, he's not brain dead at all, no. By the looks. Yeah. I totally agree.
There's some structure and strategy to what he's doing. And if you look at Champ, you know, his record right now is fantastic. And on top of that, I mean, 11th at Kapalua, which on tournament debut is fantastic. He was 12th in that QBE we keep talking about, the pairs event. Then 6th at the RSM, 10th at Mayakoba. You see what I'm saying? He just hangs around. 28th at the Shriners, although I think he went out in the final or second to last group on the Sunday and fell apart. And he won, of course, at Jackson, which, as we know, Tiff Dwarf Greens. So if you think of that, he was first on Tiff Dwarf at Country Club of Jackson. He was also 6th at Sea Island. So he clearly gets on very well with Tiff Dwarf Bermuda Grass. I just thought 30-1. On a guy that's won recently, I thought that was a good price on Champ. That will probably come and bite me on the arse and he'll win. But anyway, the four I've gone for, I'll go in reverse order on price. Guy that was second for strokes gained putting last week that really grabbed my attention. We talked about him towards the end of last year when he finished 4th at the World Golf Championship HSBC Champions event. And if you're looking for a guy that can kind of hit fairways, hit lots of greens... and who is upwardly mobile in the official world golf rankings at the moment, I thought Andrew Putnam at 80-1 was a decent shout. And we've got 8 places each way with Paddy Power on that, so the best price and also the best each way places on that. I think Putnam's the kind of player that can navigate his way around here and actually build up a decent total. And when you see he was second for strokes gained putting last week, which doesn't tend to be his game, that just kind of... ticked a lot of boxes for me at 80-1. So it's a decent each way punt, I think. Over and above Putnam, the other thing with Putnam I've noticed, if you actually look at the way where he has played well in the past, he seems to play well in kind of tropical locations. So 7th, 4th and 5th in Colombia. 8th in the Bahamas, 1st in Panama, this is all on the web.com. He then finished 5th in the Dominican Republic and 2nd in Tennessee, on the main tour last year. Now, Tennessee, as we know, is roasting hot, high humidity. That was the tournament he came second to Dustin Johnson. So I think, you know, the kind of 25, 26 degrees, the kind of tropical environment he's in this week, I think Putnam can back up the decent position he got last week. He was 14th last week. So of the nine debutants at Kapalua, he was in fourth spot. And he only finished behind McIlroy, Champ, and who was the other one? I'm getting old, chaps. That's the trouble. Oh, of course, Kevin Tway. So yep. Putnam was 14th. He finished 10 under with Charles Howe, which I thought was a decent performance from Putnam. So 80-1, I'm happy to be on board that. Next up in terms of price for me was the defending champion, and his game's rounding up really nicely. I'm on Patton Kizzire, who was 15th at the RSM Classic. That was the first time he's ever defended a PGA Tour title, so that was quite impressive, the fact he was 15th. He then went to the QBE event, the pairs event, and he won that with Brian Harman. And then last week, he was there or thereabouts all week, which was very similar to what he did last year at Kapalua, and he finished 8th. And the thing that got me about Kazaya's performance last week was the fact that he was in the top 10 for greens in regulation, and he's been struggling hitting greens for a long, long time. But now the confidence is back. He seems to have been hitting tons of greens in Florida at the QBE, and again, he's hit tons and tons of greens last week at Kapalua. So I actually think 50-1 about Kazaya is a decent enough price for me to get involved.
Yeah, he's certainly improving, isn't he?
Streaky scorer, good putter, and when he's actually hitting fairways and greens, I think he's the kind of sort that can compile that 18, 20 under total that you're going to need to be getting close to even get in the places.
Yeah, because he went right off the boil, didn't he, after his that kind of purple patch, and then when we were looking at the playoffs at the back end of last year, it was kind of, you know, how is Patton Kizzire still in these playoffs?
But it was those two wins, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, such a fantastic start to the wraparound season. But yeah, seems to be one of those kind of streaky players who then, when he finds something and the game's back on the upsurge, it's might be the time to get on board.
I don't think he lacks confidence either. I don't think he's the sort that feels that he's, you know, in a secondary type position to a lot of these boys. He likes to get stuck in. And of course, he won here last year on Tiff Dwarf. And as I said before, he's got a top five and a top ten at the Country Club of Jackson. So he clearly gets on well with the greens, this Tiff Dwarf. And that makes sense because he lives and trains at Sea Island, at the Sea Island Performance Centre, with the likes of Brian Harman. So they're practicing on Tiff Dwarf sort of every day of the week. So I like that. That would actually work for Kevin Kisner as well, because Kisner trains still at Sea Island. He doesn't live there, but he trains there. So again, yeah. Tiff Dwarf, that works well with Barry. Two others. When I saw 40-1 about Chucky Three Sticks, I just thought I'd get involved. That's kind of my insurance policy bet for the week. I could see Charles Howe getting involved this week because he hit tons and tons of greens again. He's the sort, of course, that is a... Yeah, yeah. But Steve, you've been cussing pure ball strikers. He is a pure ball striker, Howe, but he's in great nick. He won, of course, at the RSM Classic at the end of last year. His third PGA Tour title, so that feeds in quite nicely, you know, with these players that have got a win with them. So if you actually think about it, Kizai's got a win at the QBE, Howe's got a win at... he's got a win at the RSM, so that fits in nicely with that trend we were talking about earlier. And when you actually dig into his numbers around it, I don't think people really realise just how good he is at this golf course. Fourth on debut in 01, then I'll just go through the places, not the years. Third, second, fourth, fifth, second and third. That's in 9 appearances. He's also got a couple of top tens on top of those as well. And you actually go back in his history, he's actually topped strokes gained putting here and an additional 5 top 10 strokes gained putting performances on these greens. So 6 top 10 strokes gained putting performances here at Waialae. So I tried to get 40-1, but by the time we got the preview up and running and it was all finished, he'd been niggled into 33-1. So I'm taking him as a kind of insurance policy at that price. If you fancy 40s, you could even get a bit of a boost with Ladbrokes. He's still 40-1 with the standard five places, a quarter of the odds. And finally, we've all done this before, haven't we? We follow a player. We keep backing him, and then he wins the week you're not on him. I just think Leishman could go well again this week. So of the shorter prices at the head of the market, I've gone for Mark Leishman, who's got a top 10 here. He's also got a top 5 here. And he's just playing bloody good golf. He actually sits second in my greens in regulation 8-week tracker. And that's a very interesting number in my mind. You can see some real links to previous winners here. I mean, Patton Kizzire, he was in the top 10 of that GIR tracker last year when he won this. At the moment, I've got Bubba Watson, Mark Leishman at 2, Patrick Reed at 3, DeChambeau 4, Justin Thomas 5, Gary Woodland 6, and then you've got the likes of Andrew Putnam at 7 with Cameron Smith, Matt Kuchar. The other one I think, you know, people say, who do you think might go well from a DraftKings perspective, or who do you think's overpriced? We can discuss all this quickly. One player I think could go well from a DraftKings perspective, and I know we haven't got any DraftKings prices, is Ian Poulter. Because Poulter topped greens in regulation last week at Kapalua.
Yeah, his name did catch my eye as I was going down the list as well, because it's relatively long price, isn't he? Given that he did find
66s, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he obviously got his win, didn't he, last year, and he's the kind of player, again, if you look at someone who's not particularly long off the tee, this will help, the fact that it's just over 7,000 yards, it's got to be firm and fast, isn't it?
That'll suit.
Absolutely, it's not going to hinder him at all. I must say, his name did catch my eye as well.
I don't think form around Harbour Town's a bad steer for here. And we know that he plays well at Harbour Town. We know that he can play well in firm, fast conditions. I mean, remember that year that Siwu won at the Players when it was absolutely shockingly fast? He was in the top five that Players edition, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So I could see Poulter going well this week. He's only ever played here once, way, way, way back, and he missed the cut, but that means nothing. I think Poulter could be a factor. So as a DraftKings play, I would have thought he's going to be fairly cheap.
Yeah, you'd have thought so. A lot of the overseas, UK and you know, the Koreans, etc., a lot of those overseas players generally aren't amongst the highest priced players on DraftKings, and you can often pick up a... pretty good price on one, can't you? So be interested to see what he comes in at when they do go live with their pricing very shortly.
Last week, Barry, you weren't around, but I know you listened to the podcast. We were kind of highlighting some potential value DraftKings plays, because I know a lot of people say that you know, a lot of these podcasts, they all concentrate on the top six in the market and don't actually go for the guys towards the bottom that might actually get those killer points that you need to win. So I think Poulter's not a bad shout on that kind of angle. Are there players that you really think are overpriced this week who you wouldn't get involved with? I mean, Justin Thomas is being backed off the board at 6-1.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
He's being absolutely hammered.
Why. Yeah, you can see why. Clearly, you know, he's fell in love with his course before, shot 59 round here, decent finish last week or yesterday. You know, people are taking a chance that he's going to pick that up and carry on here this week. And yeah, as you say, he's been backed off the boards. He's going to start around about 6-1, isn't he?
You watched it, Barry, but if he putts like he did yesterday, I think 7-1, which was his opening price, won't be a bad price. But if the first 54 holes at Kapalua, his putting was shocking. But tee to green, he was number one. Absolutely number one across the field last week, tee to green. That flat stick to work.
Just depends if that was a blip of a good day or a turning point of the putter, and he just found it, and now he has it. Yeah. Going back there to a course where you've won before, you've good feelings, that has to be worth kind of an intangible couple of shots for the week, at least. Yeah. You know, so...
And he didn't... I know the runways are like Heathrow Airport wide, but... He said that it was the first time ever he had hit all of the fairways in a round on the PGA Tour yesterday. He hit 15 of 15 fairways. That's clearly not easy his to long do. Game and his GIR is absolutely fantastic at the moment.
Makes him dangerous, doesn't it?
It makes him very dangerous.
I think he picks up a major this year.
Put it this way, of Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau and Gary Woodland, the three heads of state this week in the markets, I would be backing Thomas, personally.
Yeah.
That's the one I'd go. Just win only. I was aiming an R in, but I made the decision to go for Leishman. But I think Thomas, win only, that would be the bet at the top of the market. Of a player that I think is really overpriced, I just can't. Jordan Spieth still. You know, I'm seeing him at 14-1. And he's shown absolutely nothing for such a long period of time now. Just got married, so I'm sure that the practice has been going well over the winter.
Yeah, focus elsewhere.
And, you know, 14-1 on Jordan Spieth. I mean, I would go nowhere near that whatsoever. So he clearly wins by five.
We shall see.
Hideki's probably a bit expensive for where, you know.
What's gone wrong there, Barry?
It's injuries, isn't it? Is it wrist injuries he had?
Yeah, he had the wrist problem.
And they're on and they're off, so he's not getting any continuity of play.
You read things about he's had some stress issues as well, apparently.
Yeah, he just got married as well, didn't he? So that makes sense.
He also has a kid. You just don't hear him. It's funny, like, I think that came out, I might have been in the No Laying Up podcast I heard it on, and eventually it came out that he had a kid, and they were like, why did we not find out about this before? He said, well, you never asked me. So, yeah. You know, he certainly keeps himself to himself, and he's probably overpriced based on his fitness record, and looking at his previous results here in Waialae, he's got 3 missed cuts, a 78th and a 27th, so doesn't get on with the course too well based on that evidence.
No. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm sure there's going to be, I mean, as we saw last year, there's going to be players that get in the mix that you'd got no chance of spotting whatsoever. I mean, last year, Tom Hoagie, James Hahn, Brian Stewart was also in the top five.
The thing that's hard to track for us is, you know, it's a full field event. Some of those guys will have been, or a lot of them will have been taking a very, very relaxed Christmas break, you know, take the time off. But a few of them might have been grinding like crazy hard and said, you know, to hell with Christmas, I'm going hell for leather. I'm getting myself, you know, really sharp for the start of the season. And when all the rest of the guys are just kind of easing back into January, February, I'm going to be ready to go and grab a win or two or some really good money and lock up my tour card for the year. So those will be the surprise guys that you'll only find out what they were doing after their good performance this week.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's difficult, isn't it? Because you don't know the personal lives of a lot of these players. But, you know, the younger single guys who, you know, haven't got a young family, aren't spending as much time with those over, you know, with the family over Christmas and over the festive period, those are the ones that could have spent the bulk of that time, as you say, honing their game, getting themselves ready for this, really attacking it. One player that caught my eye when I pulled the stats together today was Corey Connors. Now Connors isn't in the field at the moment because he's one of the alternates, but if he manages to find his way into the field at a sensible price, then he'll be another one that I take a look at. I quite fancy Connors is the kind of player that could break through over the course of this season or next. And I think he's got a good game, a good fit for this track. I was just a bit disappointed that I think he's sitting as fifth alternate at the moment. So there's going to have to be a few chops and changes with the field for him to find his way into it, which is a bit disappointing because I quite fancied he'd go well this week. But I'll keep an eye on him for some other events a bit further down the line if he doesn't manage to get a start this week. We'll see.
Just to highlight something, last year we've got predictor models at golfbettingsystem.co.uk. They're all free of charge, loads of variables, loads of statistics. Now I managed to get last year Jordan Spieth in position one in the predictor. I mean, that's not difficult for last year. Second was a bloke by the name of Brian Stewart, who then eventually placed at 125-1. And third was a bloke by the name of Patton Kizzire. So they were the top three in last year's predictor model. Now, I've thrown exactly the same variables at it this year. Mm. Yeah? Exactly the same. And it's come out with a top three of Gary Woodland at three, Justin Thomas at two, and Charles Howell the third at number one. I've also got Leishman in there at four and Patton Kizzire in there at six. So if there's anything in that, we will see. But it was bloody accurate last year.
Interesting you should mention Connor, as I see him there at 11th.
Yeah, he's an alternate, so we don't know if he's playing, but we had him. But yeah, Connors, he fits in a lot of ways. I've got a close eye on Connors at the moment. I'm with Paul. I think there's something in that chat. Whether it's this week, next week, who knows? But he's a potential winner for sure.
Yeah, I think so, and I think you'll get a good price in him that week that he does win as well. So one for the notebook.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few. I don't think Keith Mitchell's far away as well in terms of winning something.
Yeah.
I think we've talked about the entire field, so good luck to the listeners in picking your golfers after all of that.
Right, we're within chats, we're within our podcast, so we've done well this week, we've kept it tight. It starts to get more difficult next week, because we've actually got two tournaments to talk about.
We'll just talk faster.
You're at Abu Dhabi, aren't you, next week, Paul?
Abu Dhabi, the start of the Rolex series, the start of the European Tours 2019 schedule. Looking forward to that very much. Starts on Wednesday of next week, just for your notes.
just to get everything else as busy as possible over the weekend to get it all out.
Yeah, you got it. You've got it.
You've got it.
But yes, very much looking forward to that. Get my teeth into some European Tour action.
And we've also got the Desert Classic. That's the one that they play in California at PGA West. So Abu Dhabi will get pole position in terms of coverage in the podcast next week. And then we'll also talk about the Desert Classic, which I believe Justin Rose is playing at next week. It's interesting with this PGA Tour. Now they're being forced to play different tournaments every year. You are starting to get some mixed up fields, which makes it more interesting, which can only be a good thing. Right, chaps, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, best of luck.
Cheers, guys.
Gents.
Best of luck. Let's hope for a winner. And best of luck to the listeners. We will see you again next week. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.